Hey, everybody, welcome in. You know, we are continuing our journey with you into Canada Country. I'm so excited that you are going to be able to listen to all of the candidates in opposition to each other, 50-minute program, and live or taped live with no editing and in-depth. It is a really good opportunity to get to know our candidates. Today, we're talking with opposing candidates for Idaho State Legislature Seat 1A, and they are Republican incumbent Mark Sauter and Democrat opposition Karen Mathey. Everybody gets the same questions. We do our best with the candidates' help to keep the times pretty equal. So, all right, all that right after our first break. Hey, everybody, welcome back in. Join me now and say hello to state legislature candidates incumbent Mark Sauter and opposing candidate Karen Mathey. Thank you to both of you for being with us today.
Hi, thanks for having us.
All right, Karen, I'm going to start with you. Would you introduce yourself to the audience, please?
Yes, I'm Karen Mathey, and I am running for House Seat 1A here in Bonner and Boundary Counties. I was a journalist for most of my professional career, about 20 years, before moving into the nonprofit sector to manage communications for an NGO serving landmine survivors in Southeast Asia and Afghanistan. And then also, I worked for a large humane society.
All right, very good. Thank you. Thank you for being here again. Same question, Mark Sauter. You know, a lot of people know you, but introduce yourself to all of us again.
Hi, I'm Mark Sauter. Thank you for having me. I grew up in the fire service, spent my adult career there, 30 plus years. Came up here and experienced the North Idaho environment in the late 60s, and ultimately came back in the early 90s and bought some property and retired here in 2012, and I've been pretty much serving our community ever since. In the last 2 years, I've been blessed that I was elected to serve our community for 2 years in the legislature, and I'm trying to go back. So thank you for having me.
All right. Well, you're leading me right into my next question. I'm going to keep it with you. Why are you seeking re-election? Kind of give us your number one, two reasons for why are you seeking re-election?
Because there's more to do. That's the short answer. I passed five bills for our area earlier this year. All of them are based on our needs for our community. And I think I know I have a good shot at doing some more, and I'd like to do more. Our fire districts need some help. Our EMS system needs some help. And I know we have property tax issues and school issues and, healthcare issues that I know that I want to lend a hand and do. And since I've passed some bills, I know I can be effective and do it. So I've followed the trail and been successful.
Thank you. And we're going to get into some of those issues in detail. I want to find out, Karen, for you, why are you running? Why are you running in opposition to our incumbent, Mark Sauter?
Yeah, thank you, Barbara. I believe that I would make an excellent legislator, and I definitely want to be part of the solution when it comes to property taxes and the cost of living for our year-round families and focused on a fixed income and access to affordable health care for all of our North Idahoans and fully funding our public schools. I do believe that I study the issues in depth. I know how to read and interpret complicated documents, and I know how to have difficult conversations and find common ground. And I will always consult the experts and constituents who will be affected by a bill before voting on it. And lastly, I will not work for the Democratic Party. I will work for the people.
All right. Well, both of you have brought up fiscal responsibility in a couple of different ways. So keeping with you, Karen, name one area of fiscal responsibility that you think is very important, and how are you, what's the problem, and how are you going to solve it as a legislator?
Well, I guess I will circle back to property taxes, because as I've been door knocking, and I've door knocked to over 1,500 voters, both unaffiliateds and Republicans primarily, and that is a big concern. A number of people have told me they've lived in their homes their whole adult life, and they may have to sell because they can't afford the property taxes. And I do believe that there are solutions out there. And one solution that I like comes from a Republican lawmaker, not necessarily a Democratic lawmaker, and that's bringing back the index to the homeowner's exemption.
All right. So let's zero in. Would you respond to her comments on property taxes? Do you agree that's a solution? The index is one of the solutions. So what do you have in your mind when you talk about helping us with our property taxes? Mark Sauter.
I think the property tax, we need to update the homeowner's exemption. I'm not sure. The last time they tried it a few years ago, they went from 100,000 to 125,000, and I believe they tried to index and it didn't work. So one play may be to get to a number that we all can agree on and get to, and that may be the compromise that we may need to have. So,
do you have a number in mind? Would it go to 150
I think we need to do the numbers, do the math, and really, and it needs to be done comprehensively. And I know we can do it, and I've started a little bit of work with the Legislative Services Office on that. So, but I think it's going to have to be a firm number. But I'm open to ideas on it. But another issue with property taxes. It can fluctuate considerably year to year. I think we need to try and figure out how to average that, so and dull that pain, so it's over a few years rather than a single, so homeowners don't get the surprise. I think that surprise issue is as big as the number issue, because it's hard to plan for something that's a surprise. So that's an issue as well. And then if there's anyway, there's lots of property tax issues to deal with, business property taxes as well. And there's a solution out there that Montana's tried. They've worked on their on business values and property tax values for businesses, and try and help figure out how to make that work, because our property taxes have shifted over the last 10 years for sure. To where it really hits the homeowner more. I think we pay about 75% are paid by homeowners now, and about a majority of that is paid by homeowners that are Idahoans.
Yeah.
So I think we need to work on that.
I think I've heard that from a lot of people, by the way, that there's become an increasing burden. Karen, do you agree or disagree?
I do agree with that. And that after the exemption was discontinued in 2016 and the exemption was capped, we did see that commercial property taxes went down while homeowners their burden went up. So I do agree
with
that.
So both of you would want to resolve that during the next legislative session, if possible.
They both need work. Yeah, the property tax, homeowners' property tax needs work.
Okay, yes. Karen, keeping it with you, give us another fiscal responsibility area that you are interested in, that you feel that you would have input on as a legislator.
Yeah, and I think, you know, one of the biggest ones is the funding of our public schools. And I do think that, you know, we took some baby steps toward progress on funding schools. You know, House Bill 521, the facilities bill. But it didn't go far enough, especially for our North Idaho districts, and our districts that are actually rural districts, but because of Sandpoint, don't qualify for that classification.
Karen, remind me of the percentage of the Idaho budget that goes toward public education, K through university, or K through 12, if you want to limit it to 12.
You know, Barbara, I don't have that exactly.
You have that, Mark?
It's about half. Actually, I think health and welfare has taken over. It's now maybe the majority, but it's in rough figures, it's half.
And that's K-12, or does that include universities? Because I've heard 60. for including universities. But anyway,
I want to say it's roughly half.
Okay, thank you for that.
Yeah, and so I think there are some solutions out there. One is a solution that's been around for a while, and I think there's a reason that it keeps coming back because I think it's a good one. And the Office of Public Education identified $5.2 billion sales tax exemptions that haven't been reviewed since the 1960s. Now, in the 1960s, they made sense because we were a growing state. And now we are one of the fastest growing in the state. So if we just take about 10% of those and declare them obsolete, it would free up about $500 million for school facilities every year.
All right. Mark, two areas to comment on, and that would be the school budget. What we spend on education needs to be, I guess I heard correctly, increased and for public education and changing the sales tax formulas.
Exemptions.
Oh,
yeah,
okay.
Change the exemptions. Sorry.
Yeah,
reviewing
the school bill... school funding is—it's a real challenge for rural Idaho. Most funding that goes to schools for operation and teaching kids is based on a per ADA, average daily attendance. So that's very difficult for rural Idaho. It also puts the schools in a tough spot where the kids have to be there or they don't get the money. So that's a real challenge. And if a school district misses 10% of their kids, like in West Bonner, and they move over to Sandpoint, they still have to keep the lights on in West Bonner, but now instead of the revenue from 1,000 students, then now they get 900. So that's a pretty tough hit. So I think work needs to be done on the formula that funds school operations, there has to be an ADA component, absolutely. But there should be something in there, but with the rural schools to adapt it to that, a formula. And then special ed kids also are a driver for costs, and that's not something that's easily dealt with at the local level, especially the rural schools. So a couple of special ed kids that have some real need can really challenge a school district to
teach.
What
about the sales tax exemption review? I mean, if it's true, they haven't been looked at since the 60s. I mean, could that be true?
That's like
70 years or 60.
Yeah, I'm not opposed to looking at it. We talked about it last year about bringing this back.
Why isn't it being done then? What's your read on why is that not at the top of the list for some people?
A simple answer is it's tough to claw back money from money that you've already doled out. I'd offer a different way to look at it, and that is the buckets that we save money in for the state. There's more than a dozen different accounts. All of those accounts are full now. Actually, some are a lot higher than they were 10 years ago, markedly higher. So I'd offer, besides looking at the 600 exemptions, which are going to be a challenge because every one of those has been hard fought to get for people.
It's very political. I mean,
right.
To me, it's a political situation,
right.
not fiscal.
Right.
Yeah.
But I'd say let's look at those buckets that we've been saving money in and be really careful. If we have too much money in savings or too much money in our savings buckets, that money's not helping our schools. And I think that's a critical issue that we should look at.
As a taxpayer, I want some of that money back.
Well, absolutely.
I mean,
and
you
that's
know,
what
we're paying too much. You got buckets that are overflowing, Mark.
You've let the cat out of the bag. Well, I wouldn't say they're overflowing, and I'd say there's a certain amount of that's very responsible and very conservative to save and be ready for a rainy day. But you still have to have a balance there and make sure it works.
I have another question.
Yes, ma'am.
That's education for both of you. And that is, I mean, more and more and more people are choosing private education, whether it's faith-based or not, whether it's Waldorf or these new high schools we have that are accredited and yet they are private. And we have faith-based, plus we have homeschooling. And more people want to make those choices. And what is your position on trying to find some way to support taxpayers who want to use some share of the education funding over here in other choices than public?
The Empowering Parents Grant is $1,000 a year every year for all kids, whether they're homeschooled, whether they're in public or private schools. That's available. Empowering parents or empowering students is another grant that's up to about $4,500 for the course of the student's education. I think it's 8 through 12 to also help for classes. So there are funding sources for privately educated and homeschool kids. Homeschool kids also have the opportunity to go to their local schools.
They can do dual enrollment.
Dual enrollment. Yeah. So they can do that. They can also go to get classes from NIC. So there are lots of options for kids to go, for families.
This is going to be a really hard question. Karen, I'll get to you, but pro, for or against vouchers, where it's not like a program and they have to, apply and there are these different streams, but just vouchers are offered. Parents want to go in a different direction than public. You can go take that voucher and you can spend it here at Waldorf. You can spend it at Valor. You can spend it on computers.
Well, the equipment side, we've dealt with that.
Yes,
it's
that's true.
It's really, it goes back to the tuition thing and where what the school is.
Okay.
I voted against the vouchers, the ones that have come through the education committee, because I didn't think financially they made sense. And I also, accountability-wise, no one has come forward with an accountability system that would tell me that taxpayer money will be used wisely on educating the kids.
Well, it's not always used wisely, just used for education. I mean, there's okay.
Okay, and you're smiling right now telling me that, and there's a twinkle in your eye. So let's just be clear.
Yeah.
It needs, people, Idahoans
some
want
kind of
something that's responsible.
Yeah.
And it needs to work in our budget. And so far, I have not seen that. And so I'm really hesitant.
You're open if it's...
Well,
if it's...
Arizona's has a voucher system that's gone from $40 million to $400 million in a matter of a year or two. So we have to be careful about what are the unintended consequences of making some of these decisions.
All right.
So
let's take it to Karen, your comment on private education, also having some equity in the education dollar
right.
Arena.
Well, I would agree with Mark on this issue that there are a number of programs that parents can take advantage of. Regarding the vouchers, I do have a problem with accountability as well. That seems to be missing from all the proposals that I've seen. And if you look at other states that have had voucher systems, they put a cap on it, and then the cap gets lifted, and it keeps going higher and higher and higher, and more money is spent. And I do have a problem with separation of church and state as well. And I think everyone deserves to have a free quality education. Now, I do have a problem with siphoning off taxpayer money for vouchers when Idaho schools are already the worst funded in the country or vying with Utah for the worst funded in the country. So, and our schools, I think, are doing an excellent job of educating our students, but think how much better they could do if they were properly funded.
All right, thank you for that. We're up against our next break. We're going to take that break right now. All right, everyone. Thank you for being with us today. Welcome back. And we are talking today with Mark Sauter. He is running as an incumbent, running for his second term in the state legislature, seat 1A. And opposing him for that on your ballot November 5th is Karen Mathey. And she is a Democrat running against Mark. All right, you guys, welcome in. Thank you for being with me today. I appreciate it very much. I'm going to change the topic. Karen, I'm going to start with you. I would like your opinion. How are you going to vote, or how have you already voted on ranked choice voting?
Proposition 1 you're talking about.
Right, but specifically the ranked choice voting element.
Okay. Well, isn't it just one proposition?
It's
all or nothing, right? Yeah. Well, I have made no secret of the fact that I am a proponent of Proposition 1, and I think it's important for our voters to understand where we as candidates stand on that issue, because, if it does pass, the legislature can vote to repeal it, just like has happened with Medicaid expansion. So I think it's important that voters know where we stand. I like Proposition 1. I think ranked choice voting is not all that difficult. I think that the opposition to Prop 1 would like people to think that it's more confusing than it is. And I like to say, well, if we can understand the Electoral College, we can understand ranked choice voting. It's not that hard. And I feel that Proposition 1 is necessary because our primaries are critical. As a Democrat,
that's
I would
why
have...
I'm trying to direct you away from the open primary part of the proposition into ranked choice voting, because
okay.
I think that's where the rubber hits the road.
Yeah, I like it. I like having four choices. I've come to understand how it's going to be on the ballot. I don't think it's hard. You vote for your first choice, your second, and you know who you can live with, and okay. the bottom of the barrel there.
All right.
It's not hard.
All right. Thank you for that. Mark, what's your opinion on ranked choice voting?
On the floor of the House, I voted against ranked choice voting. So that's really the direct answer to you. I wasn't comfortable with it a year and a half ago when it came to the House. It was much less popular, much mm-hmm. less known about it, but it was something that I didn't think our voters would want.
Let me understand, let our listeners understand, you voted in favor then of banning ranked choice voting?
It was a bill, a bill that ran in the House in 2023
right.
about ranked choice voting, should it be done in our state. And I think just for statewide elections. And I voted against it because I didn't think the people here, our residents, would want it yet. And not yet, but would want it, because I think people like, the voting system that we have now. When I talk to our county clerks, they very much support our voting system. It passes all the audits and checks and everything else. So
it's a good
system. So you asked about ranked choice voting.
Yes.
And that's what,
all right. Thank you for that. All right. The next one I want to bring up is pro-life, pro-choice. Again, when I talk to people, I say, what would you like to hear them talk about, like candidates? And it's interesting how that these things come up, pro-choice, pro-life. So keeping it with you, Mark, do you feel that if there were legislation that comes before you that promotes pro-choice, promotes abortion, or promotes life, where would you fall on voting? I know the devil might be in the details, but generally
sure.
speaking.
I've ran as a pro-life candidate. I've voted positive, for women's health bills. One to really clean up a lot of questions in 2023.
Yes.
I think that was House Bill 374. And then this latest session, I voted for three other bills, one to extend contraception from 3 to 6 months, another to start a maternal mortality report again for our state, and I voted for that one, and another one to extend Medicaid coverage for new moms from 60 days to a year. So I voted for all of those. Again, a pro-life candidate, but pro-life is also taking good care of the lives that we have, and I've followed through with that.
Okay.
So I was not a part of our trigger bills and all that, so that was not on my watch, and I frankly have not studied that well. We have work to do on women's health. We need to, we certainly have some issues with our doctors up here in our healthcare system, but I think there's work to do, and I'd love to be somebody to carry a bill if I can get reelected. To touch on some of that, because
right.
we definitely have some issues that we need to clarify for our medical community.
But in the process of, as you said, with pro-life, both for mom and baby.
Right.
All right, Karen, what's your position, please?
Well, I'm neither pro-life or pro-choice. I am pro-women's health care, and I do believe that one of the reasons that many doctors have fled the state, including our four OBGYNs here, along with some financial issues and the loss of labor and delivery, is that the abortion ban is vague and it criminalizes doctors. And so I believe that there is a fix that would be easy to make. I hope it happens in the next session and that I'm part of it. Only House Minority Leader Ilana Rubel introduced a bill to fix the ban, an amendment that would protect the health and fertility of the mother, the patient, as well as her life. And I am a proponent of that, and I think that is the kind of clarification that our doctors are seeking.
All right, thank you.
The problem with that, just for clarification,
yes,
it's been said lots of times, we have to read the bill and we have to really follow along with the course of that bill. The person that brought that bill is a very intelligent person, but I would comment on it that it didn't get into our system of voting for a reason, and that's it was never introduced to the body of the House or the Senate. It was what's called read across the desk. We don't need to get into all those details, but it deleted a number of different sections of code. I'm not saying that it was a bad bill necessarily, but it was a giant leap from where we are today. It was more than just women's health. So I think we're going to have to eat that elephant one bite at a time and take that slow but sure. And I think the women's health element is an issue, and I think it needs to be addressed, and it needs to be adjusted. But I don't think we can take a broad brush at things. And we also are going to have to build up a coalition and really work with everyone in the House, not just the Republicans or the Dems, but we're going to have to really talk to everyone about this issue and say, we're going to need to move forward on this, so we can keep our healthcare system whole.
Mark, you've had experience with this. Yes.
Can I just add to that,
yes,
please?
You may.
Yes.
Thank you.
My understanding from physicians groups and citizen groups that they worked with legislators last session, they begged them, the GOP, to do something to rectify the situation, and nothing was done. And that's what I have been told. And these are mainly physicians and physicians groups. And Amelia Huntsberger, who was an OBGYN here, testified recently before the Senate. I think it was Ways and Means. And one of the problems for her, she said it's a morality issue because, you know, even if a pregnant patient faces organ loss, paralysis, loss of fertility, they would still not be able to seek an abortion in this state. As a doctor, she would not have been able to perform an abortion to save that patient's health, and furthermore, burden her with a life of really serious health conditions as a result, and that does happen.
I have been informed that there hasn't been, I don't even know when there was an abortion at Bonner General Hospital. Abortions were not performed in Bonner General. You can go back 30 years, 40 years. There were no abortions in Bonner General Hospital. So, I mean, I understand what you're saying, but it's not like there was like this abortion procedure that was ongoing and then now that was taken away.
No, it's true. Bonner General did not do elective abortions. And in fact, in the year leading up to the Dobbs decision, there weren't that many abortions that took place in Idaho. So that begs the question, why this ban was needed with all the horrendous fallout that it has created.
I think to protect the life of the baby, potentially. But that would just be the way I would answer that.
But if it wasn't happening, why was it necessary?
Mark, do you want to answer that? Since she was looking at me. I'm not running here.
I don't know that I can answer why that had to run, why the trigger bills had to run. I wasn't there. I wasn't part of the conversation. Mm. I've tried to be, you know, part of the solution. I was a part of getting 374 out,
right,
and getting it on the floor and having committee meetings and all that. So that's where I've tried to do is incremental change and not focus on, you know, this doesn't happen very often. It's like, well, but it's an issue. It's impacting our community, and how can we take steps to remedy that problem? And that's so. I guess I'm more of a fire chief in that. It's like, hey, how do we put this fire out? So let's get with it.
That is,
I would like to add just one thing about the pro-life, pro-choice question that you asked originally. And I do believe that, you know, if someone is truly pro-life, if they want a young single mom to choose to have her baby, then, you know, we shouldn't be withholding funds for childcare, for affordable housing, and making it difficult for pregnant moms to get on Medicaid. And we do, compared to other states. It's quite a bit harder here. So I say, you know, if we are truly, truly pro-choice, then we need to support, pro-life, we need to support those young women who decide to keep their babies. And I don't think we're doing that now.
All right. Thank you for that. We are up against our last break. We're going to take it right now. Hey, everybody, welcome back in. Thanks for being with us today. We are talking with Mark Sauder. He is running again as the incumbent for State Representative Seat 1A. Opposing him is Karen Matte, and they both want your vote, but unfortunately, you can't vote for both of them. You have to choose one, and that's what we're about today. So we were talking on the break. It came up at the end of the last section that infrastructure is important, as well as public safety. Karen, I'll start with you. As a legislature, what is your role? What do you see that you can, one idea that you can push for if elected regarding infrastructure?
Infrastructure. Well, I was just talking about this issue, and when I think of infrastructure, I don't just think of roads and highways. I think of internet access and what's happening in to get internet access to our rural areas, and there is some progress. There's been federal funds that have come down the pike to help with that, and we have the State Broadband Commission that's helping with that as well. And so I would like to just keep pushing on that and get those areas connected. I know that there some cable has been laid out there. It was part of a federal program to connect schools. And so if I could speed up the process to get these homeowners connected, I would try to do that.
All right. Same question, Mark. An area specific of infrastructure that you would like to see improved at the state level?
I'd say we need to continue. The state has funded infrastructure, roads and bridges, about $500 million the last 3 years straight. That hasn't taken care of all of our bridge replacements. That hasn't repaved every road in the state. But we're on a heck of a path to improve our infrastructure with that type of spending. I voted in favor of all of those different bills. Because I think it is incredibly important for our safety as well as our business community and our commerce to have good roads and bridges. So that's just something that we've done, and I think we're going to continue to be mindful of what it costs to actually have a road system that's safe, reliable, and just comfortable to ride on.
Let me ask you, water, infrastructure for water and wastewater, waste treatment, is, you know, what can the state do to help out with those issues as we have such growth that's putting pressure in those areas?
The state's actually provided millions of dollars in state grants for different water treatment facilities and to different water and sewer districts.
And that level is good.
Last year, we're trying to keep up. We have hundreds of water systems. A lot of them are antiquated that need work, and the state's been supporting those as they can to try and dull the cost for the homeowners and the users of those systems. So yes, we have a utilities division in the state that monitors that. So I think we're doing okay. There's always room for improvement,
right?
But we are monitoring that. So roads, bridges, water. And then you asked about public safety. We have some issues with our public safety, our fire districts especially, to have them be able to grow with the growth of our communities. And it's not just in the Treasure Valley. It's not just in central Idaho, and it's even up here. So we need to change some of our fire district statute so the districts can combine if they like, and they also have to be able to have their levies flex along with their growth. And right now, House Bill 379 that was written 3 or 4 years ago curtails that growth. And I worked for 5 months this last session trying to get it fixed, and I think we've finally got a fix over a month ago now. So we'll see how we do. If I can get reelected, I'd love to run that bill, but I've worked with the fire chiefs across the state to make that better and get some better fire protection out of it.
All right, Karen, back to you on the issue of infrastructure. You can comment on what Mark has talked about, or you can bring up your own area that you believe is a priority.
No, I think we do need, you know, I don't think that we're, you know, I think we're fairly in alignment on all of this. I think we need to continue with the good work that we've done. I think we cannot turn away federal dollars that help with that, and there's been a lot of federal support for bridges and infrastructure. So I think we just keep on keeping on.
You know, one of the things on infrastructure that I'm thinking about is thinking about all the hurricane people, our emergency services, our ability to do emergency response here in Idaho. Do you think it's adequate, or do you think that's an area where improvements needed, or do you know?
Well, I'm a little worried about what's happening with our fire districts here, as I live in rural Dover, and now that I understand that the city is going out on its own, and I think that our other districts are grappling with what that means for them. So I'm a little concerned. I don't know exactly what the answer is, but I am I'm a concerned homeowner.
All right, real quick.
Sure. You really mentioned the hurricane issue. It's a fact across our state we have deserts for emergency medical services where our ISP is the emergency responder for first aids too. We need to shore that up. There's a bill that I got asked to run a month ago that may be able to help that. I worked on one last year, wasn't able to get it to the finish line, but I know we're going to try that EMS fix again and essentially try and line up our EMS agents, our EMS providers, so they can work more better together.
Yes or no? I talked to so many EMS. I did a whole series on law enforcement and for an EMS and dispatchers. Every one of them said communication was at the top of their list, that they could all communicate. Yes or no? Do you think that's adequately addressed, or is that something that you would do?
We have room to improve.
Yes.
I can tell you that right now.
Okay, and yes.
Say yes,
you're
as
aware
well.
Of it.
Yes.
Can you believe it? You have to say goodbye. So sign off, Karen, say goodbye to the audience, and I'm going to say go ahead and ask them to vote for you.
All right. Well, Barbara, thank you so much for having me and giving me an opportunity to share my my opinions, and thanks all for listening.
Yeah, thank you. All right, Mark Sauter.
Okay, I'm asking for your vote. I'm asking to serve. I want to listen to our constituents, and I want to go back and continue to promote a safe and sustainable North Idaho. I've proved I can pass a bill and get something done for our districts, and I want to go back and do it. And I just had one last piece about our school facilities that I didn't get to touch on, and that is I spoke with one of our school superintendents earlier today. House Bill 521, while we can always do more, her comment was this was the first significant facilities bill that's run for our schools in 30 years. So it may not be the end, but we got a good start.
All right.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you to both of you. I want you to invite you all back next week. We've got two programs coming your way next week, a special on Monday the 21st at our regular time, State Senate candidates Jim Woodward, Dan Rose, and then on the Tuesday program on the 22nd, County Commissioner candidates Ron Korn and Glenn LaFay. So until then, this is Barbara saying take care, slow down, and may God bless you.